Point is, the Mechts are giving our magic to Argrid. Whatever Eleazar's doing, his plan is already in motion, and I can't. Nyeli pushed forward.
You can't what?
She whispered, somehow still demanding. Hansu kept her gaze on Lu. Calculations swam across her face, and Lu could tell she was weighing the strength of her raiders against the Mecht Syndicate, the Council, and an Argridian army augmented by magic. I can't fight them all, she admitted. Nyeli put her hand to her lips and stepped back, a falter that peeled away her hardness. Her face was that of someone who had been starving for years and found nourishment.
You don't want a war, Kansu told Lu. But it might be too late to stop it.
Lu's heart sank. She had been coming to that realization, too. The enormity of it loomed before her.
What do we do?
Lu asked, half to herself. She had planned to make Milo atone, to make him prove that the fear Argrid had stoked between the Council and raiders was fake. Now that seemed useless. Even if all the factions on Grace Luray unified, would Argrid still be able to conquer them with magic? What would move the Council to action instead of debating blame and prejudices as tragedy lapped at their doorstep? Again, her chest tugged with desire. She needed to talk to her parents. They would be able to help her piece together an effective plan.
It isn't too late, Etta offered. No matter who's coming, Argrid isn't here yet. I didn't think the great Kansu was one to drop without throwing a punch.
Kansu looked at Etta, amused.
I may not have the manpower to take down Pilkvist, but some of my raiders have mixed Tunkian and Mecht ancestries. They can pass enough as Mecht and buy their ways onto his crews to watch for shipments of plants or contact with Argrid. They can stop Pilkvist from doing whatever he's supposed to be doing.
You want to discredit him with his Argridian contacts, Nyeli expanded. They'll turn on him, and it'll cut off whatever Eleazar was using Pilkvist for.
Kansu nodded.
I'll do it, Nyeli said, bouncing. I'll buy my way onto one of his crews.
You were in Pilkvist's prison, Lu countered. His raiders could recognize you, and you don't look the least bit mecked. Nyeli gave her a furious glare.
Etta cut in. She's right, Ney. But I certainly look mecked enough. I'll do it.
Lu shook her head. They could recognize you, too. If they do, let them try to do something. I'll love getting to knock around the people who sullied my country by allying with Argrid. Nyeli giggled wickedly.
Kansu's raiders, and Etta, could discredit the Mechts and make them useless to Argrid. The plan would take out the Mecht Syndicate. The remaining threats would be the Council's hatred of the raiders and Eleazar's magic.
Those on Pilkvist's crews can keep alert for news of Milo, Lu pressed. Kansu frowned.
You wanna find that Argridian?
Stopping the Mecht Syndicate won't defeat Argrid. Not if they have magic to supplement their army. We'll need more than just Council soldiers. We'll need a wholly unified Grace Lorraine army, like what stopped Argrid the first time. We have at most 2 weeks to convince the Council that they can trust the other raider syndicates. Milo's disappearance is what riled the Council in the first place. Ultimately, proving that the abduction was a lie will reveal that Argrid was manipulating the Council.
There's no time,
Vex started, leaning on the wall of the pilot house.
We have 2 weeks, if we're lucky. What if we find Ibarra and Eleazar shows up the next day? If we have any hope of winning this, we need the Council on our side now. Otherwise, it's just us.
Then we bring the Council here, Lu squared herself. My mother is a senior Council member, Kari Andrew. If I return to Nudiza and tell her what has happened, she will listen. She may be able to convince other Council members to send soldiers or envoys or someone who can bear witness now so there is no delay. Though I fear the Council will not be swayed if there is no proof. Which is why finding Milo Ibarra is still so urgent. He will confirm what I tell my mother. Kansu grinned.
Wait. Your mother is Kari the Wave? You make so much more sense now.
A swell of pride made Lu soften. Do we agree, then? Your raiders will infiltrate Pilkfist's crews and wait for information on Argrid and Ibarra, and I will return to Nudiza to get what I can from the Council.
With us, Vex added.
Lou looked at him, surprised, but he smiled.
How do you think you're going to get to Nudiza? We'll take you.
Etta darkened.
I don't like the idea of you going somewhere without me for protection. Who knows how the situation in Nudiza might change? How many days can you spare?
Give me some time on Pilkfist's crew. 3 days, maybe four. Let me see what news I can get before you go traipsing off into danger.
Can we wait that long? Vex pressed.
Lou thought.
Kansu,
can you have one of your raiders run a letter to my mother while we're here? As soon as possible. One raider will surely travel faster than we could, anyway. But I will get to Nudiza as quickly as Etta allows.
Kansu waved her hand in agreement and made for the hatch.
Consider it done. I'll get my raiders on their parts now.
She paused, and her attention went for one soft moment to Nayeli. Were those tears in Nayeli's eyes, or just a shadow? But she was smiling, the only one on deck who looked happy.
Kansu briefly returned her smile and disappeared into the hatch. When Kansu was gone, Vex turned to Etta.
You think you can find Ibarra in 3 days? I still don't like waiting here.
He bounced on his feet, driven to movement by the same anxiety Lou felt wrapping around her lungs.
The time would be good, actually, Lou said for Etta.
Etta will have access to a lot of botanical magic. She can get me what plants I need to start working on your cure. Nayeli grinned.
Aw, Lou doesn't want you to die.
I'm not that sick yet, Vex said. Besides, seeing Argrid defeated will do me more good than any cure.
The cure will help others across Grace Luray too, though,
Etta added.
It'll undo a lot of the pain Argrid has inflicted. It isn't just about you, dear Captain. Lou's thinking about the bigger problems, like she always does.
Lou's blush deepened in shame. Etta's words were true, but in the moment, Lou had been concerned only with saving Vex. The simplicity of being able to help him felt so much better, so much less immense than all their other plans. Of course, the cure for shaking sickness would bring healing to others on Grace Luray. Of course it would contradict more of Argrid's influence. Lou should have realized that. Selfishly, she had wanted to do something small and easy and pure for once in her life.
I can start working now, Lou said, pushing through.
I'll need plants, though, and a workspace to make the tonics. Do you know what plants the church gave you? She asked Vex.
Does it matter?
Very much. He rolled his eye.
Of course it does.
There are plants that can help with remembering. Bright mint, for instance. Lou's mind started flying through possibilities, various plants, and what supplies she would need. She could cure Vex. She wanted to cure him, and as soon as she let herself admit that desire, it filled every hollow part of her body. She would not have to watch another person she cared about die of shaking sickness. Vex grinned. Lou realized she had muttered the last part aloud. Her eyes widened, and she yanked her hand off his arm. He pointed at her, grinning.
You care about me,
he sang.
Oh, I knew this would happen. I'm not sure I have the energy for an errant love affair, so cure me first. Then we can talk about...
I'll be below decks, Lou snapped, but her statement made him and Nayeli and even Etta hoot with laughter.
No, I meant... Oh, you're impossible.
Lou swung for the hatch. But compared to the utter misery that had choked her earlier, this happiness felt far too good to let go of. Her lips rose in a slow smile.
Even if I did mean for you to follow me below decks, Devereaux, I doubt you would know the first thing about pleasing a woman of my class.
She dropped down the hatch amid jeers and a groan of defeat from Vex. The noises muffled in the hall, and Lou paused, willing this to be all she focused on. This respite let her pretend that laughter was the only thing ahead and behind, that war was not brewing, that she had not decided to press on in search of Milo Ibarra. But now,
When Milo was brought to the council, an unaligned criminal would not be the one returning him. A whole syndicate would. It would not merely prove the Raiders' innocence, it would set the course for a unified country of the Council and Raiders. It would create a nation of acceptance. Lou's eyes lifted to the hatch. She smiled and headed for the room where Teo slept. 26. The ships Eleazar chose to take were galleons in the older style, with masts and sails. Eleazar's ship, Ben's, plus three war brigantines made a small armada as they left Diza, gliding into the Ovidic Ocean. The sails would take about a week longer to reach Grace Luray, and these ships were typically used for ceremonial purposes. So it was unsurprising that Eleazar told Ben,
"It isn't for speed, Benyet. We sail these ships to remind the islanders of the time we walked hand in hand with them on Grace Luray's shores."
Before the war. Before the church seized control of the island and started its mission to purify it. Lifetimes ago. Ben's ship was the Astuto, cunning. Eleazar's, the Desapiadado, ruthless. Ben stood on the forecastle deck of the Astuto, elbows on the railing, head lifted to let the ocean breeze pick through his hair. They'd filled the past hours with packing, planning, and tying off loose ends in Diza. Ben had been grateful for every task, mundane things to keep him busy. Now everything was still.
"We're to meet your father's suppliers off the southern coast of Grace Luray."
Yakis's voice didn't make him turn.
"They will have more plants for your tonics." "Who are these suppliers?" He didn't say.
The ship reeled. Ben pulled in a lungful of salty air, willing his face to stay stoic as he gazed at the blue horizon.
"I haven't given you your assignment for the voyage,"
he told Yakis.
"Ben, you take liberties, Defensor." "Don't do that."
Yakis grabbed Ben's arm and forced him to turn.
"I told your father what he asked me to report, but my heart was always yours first. I obeyed him because he is my king, and his vision will bring about the change the world needs, the change my family believed in before they died."
Yakis drew in a breath, his voice quaking when Ben looked away.
"It's what you want too, Ben. I didn't do anything that you don't also..." "You told me you joined the Defensors to serve the pious god,"
Ben said. He could dismiss his nausea as seasickness, not his own repulsion at himself.
"It should please you to know that the task I have for you now came to me from the pious god himself. It is your holy, ordained mission."
Yakis stayed quiet. He kept his hand around Ben's arm, and Ben didn't push him away.
"You served quite effectively as my father's spy. That role will continue. Defensor Rayan, you will now be an intermediary between my father and myself. I will send for you when I have need to transport messages to the king."
"You can't be..."
"After this voyage, you may choose any post you like, as long as it is not in my household."
"Ben!"
Ben glared at him. The first time he had looked at Yakis with anything other than adoration. It didn't destroy him as he'd expected. He was too furious for that. Yakis pulled on his arm, trying to draw him closer. Ben shoved him away.
"Do not expect to entertain the same freedoms you have previously enjoyed,"
Ben stated.
"You have proven fit for one position while in my employ, and that is to spread information to others. The pious god rewards those who exercise abstinence, and we became far too practiced at sin, Defensor. This is punishment for our meaningless indulgences."
He choked on his words. "It wasn't meaningless. Not to me." Ben stalked away. The moment his eyes left Yakis, his fury fizzled out. In its place came aching, destructive sorrow. He'd been a fool to think, to feel. And Eleazar had used that. He'd taken advantage of Ben, a violation that crawled up from the recesses of Ben's soul and dragged disgust along every nerve. Ben reeled down the stairs to the Astuto's main deck, scrambling across the wood for the center hatch. He dropped below, dove behind a pillar in the second deck hall, and retched up everything he'd managed to eat since his entire world had overturned. He hadn't had time to feel any of this. They had moved from Grace Neu's holding cells to the palace, to the docks, Yakis with him, Eleazar leaving to oversee his own preparations. Now it crashed into Ben, every memory of Yakis warping, so he saw Eleazar there too, sneering at his son, who could be manipulated by a pretty face, a soft touch. All those days of Ben letting himself hope, all those moments thinking he could save Argrid and not live a lie. But the future that awaited him was in scheming, making sacrifices of himself for small, weak victories over Eleazar. He had to be hard. He had to not feel. He had to be his father's son.
My prince.
It was a different defensor. Yakis hadn't followed him. Ben dropped against the pillar, pinching the bridge of his nose.
Yes. All is prepared, as you asked.
Ben wiped his mouth on his sleeve, wanting to retch again, wanting to dissolve. He straightened his blue tunic and nodded for the defensor to show him the way. They'd set up his laboratory on the Astuto's middle deck. The room was long and narrow, with two portholes giving light alongside encased lanterns. A table lined the back wall. Cupboards were locked and stocked with vials, jars, extra necessities, bought with the last of the mech's aid money. A crate held the plants his father had ordered for him. Ben's final request was here as well, the true request. Everything else had been to cover this one foolish hope. In the middle of the room, the mech'd warrior sat on a chair, chains across his chest with his wrists shackled to the rear legs. A muzzle again covered his mouth, and two defensors, pistols drawn as though the man might break loose on a whim, flanked him.
Give me the keys to his bindings, and you are dismissed,
Ben told the guards. One of the defensors gave a look of horror.
My prince, I do not advise releasing. How else am I to uncover the secrets of his magic? Then we will stay, for your protection. I hardly think so.
Ben stepped up to the mech.
Is he dangerous? Yes. But we are on a wooden ship, so unless he's suicidal, I do not believe he would risk open flames. Anyway, this man is in the beginning stages of recanting. He will not displease the pious god. Will you?
Ben looked at him. The mech's eyebrows drew together.
See? I'll be quite safe, defensor,
Ben said, as though the mech had agreed.
I would not subject anyone to the work I do. I do not ask you to stay. The pious god has tasked me alone with this mission. If I require your assistance, I will give the order.
The defensors bowed and handed Ben the keys. As the door closed behind them, Ben undid the mech's muzzle.
You could have made things difficult for me,
Ben told him.
Thank you.
The mech gave him a disdainful look. Ben leaned against the table, eyes on the keys that he bounced in his hand. The temperature of the room increased, or perhaps it was Ben's expectation, thinking the mech infected the air around him with heat.
What do you want?
The mech finally asked.
I have not accepted recanting.
You haven't recanted, you don't accept recanting.
The mech snorted as though to say, you want to talk about grammar? Ben smiled, but it was a frail expression. He closed his fingers around the keys.
My father wishes me to create permanent tonics, as the mechs have created with Eye of the Sun,
Ben said. The mech's blue eyes narrowed, their color intensifying. Ben had never seen that in anyone else, eyes that changed with a person's mood.
I will not help you.
The mech spoke each word with lethal precision.
Your priests think to break me with torture. It did not work. You will not work either.
Blood drained from Ben's head.
They tortured you? How?
The Mecht fell silent. Ben shoved away from the table.
It doesn't matter.
It does, it does, it does.
My father wants these tonics. The church backs him. Argrid will rejoice in a weapon ordained by the pious god to wipe out our enemies and reclaim Argrid's glory.
As Ben spoke, the Mecht's breathing escalated, smoke streaming from his nose. Ben doubted his certainty that the Mecht wouldn't unleash his hellfire on a wooden ship. Ben shifted around the chair and unlocked the Mecht's bindings, speaking as he worked.
I don't want to know how to make magic permanent, but my father will expect results, and I'm smart enough that I would one day figure it out. You know how to make magic permanent, so I need you to stop me. If I get too close, redirect me. Don't tell me why. I need to make it look convincing, as if I'm trying, until I can...
There, his great plan ended. He could go back to his one feeble idea, to make the healing potion and give it to the Argridian people, explaining that it was magic and not the church that healed them. But he didn't have enough support, not with Eleazar watching so closely. One heretic prince could not bring down his father and the church and convince a devout country to change their ways. Eleazar would have him burned the moment Ben started to contradict him. Ben needed time, and this would buy him some. The Mecht rose from the chair, rubbing his wrists. He still wore his old clothes, tattered and stained, but he smelled more like fire than like he'd spent weeks in a cell. Ben stood behind his chair, and the Mecht turned, his expression hard.
I can't trust anyone in my whole goddamn country, Ben said, which is why you're here. You hate me, and I trust that more than I trust the people around me who claim to serve the pious god.
The Mecht allowed himself one beat of surprise before his anger returned, stronger. A single flame licked his lips.
This is a trick. I understand you have no reason to believe otherwise, but it isn't. Help me, and I can ensure you won't return to a church holding cell. I can make a case to spare the rest of your crew.
The Mecht shrugged.
Kill them. Free them. I do not care. I bought passage on that ship with service, not loyalty. I joined when they traded off the Mechtlin's southern coast.
Ben remembered then. The captain of the Mecht ship, telling the defensors in Deeza that this man was not part of their crew, and the church could have him.
Then I know that you intended to get off that ship a free man,
Ben said.
You'll need to recant. Make it look like you're a servant of the pious god now, so you can move about freely.
The Mecht took a large step back.
A trick. I knew it. Not a trick. A lie. To survive. I would rather die with truth than survive with lies.
Ben's exhaustion had been keeping him in a state of thoughtless movement. But here, this man clung to integrity like Ben was some self-righteous monksy chanting empty prayers. He would have shouted if defenders hadn't been nearby. The best he could do was grab an empty vial and hurl it to the floor where it shattered, glass spraying against his boots. Predictably, it didn't make him feel any better.
Someone will have heard that,
Ben said.
Defensors will be here soon, and they'll haul you away to a cell in this ship, then one back in Argrid. Or they just might kill you, and this country will keep hurting people because you couldn't say one goddamn lie. I expected more from a fearsome Mechtlin barbarian. Didn't realize I'd get a coward. We are not barbarians,
the Mecht shot back.
My country may be dangerous, people dying in the streets, starving, blood flowing, but we know our enemy, and our enemy knows us. Here you have no honor, it is secrets, it is lies, I will not be Argridian. You aren't in the Mechtlins. You can't wage battles here like you do there.
A knock at the door.
My prince, are you all right?
Ben kept his gaze on the Mecht.
Am I?
The mech's hands balled. I don't ask you to trust me, Ben said, or like me.
His words fell. God, what was he asking?
For the impossible. The mech said nothing. Ben's shoulders went slack as he neared the door, one hand out to the knob, already reciting what he would have to say. The prisoner is not fit to recant. You were right, Defensor. Take him away.
All right,
the mech said. Ben stopped, fingers around the doorknob.
All right,
the mech repeated when Ben looked back.
I play by Argrid's rules. But you are not my prince, and I am not your subject. And we wage war by my rules when the time comes.
Ben forced his face blank as he opened the door. A defensor had his fist raised to knock again, a pistol in his other hand. More were behind him. Yakis, too.
Apologies, defensors, Ben said. My new assistant dropped a vial. Days in a cell can do that to a man, I understand. But pious God willing, he will soon be strong again.
The defensors looked at a loss. One stammered,
What happened, my prince?
The prisoner has chosen to recant.
Ben kicked the door open wider, revealing the mech, who had his arms folded, face pinched in a scowl. God damn it, was Ben the only one who could play off a lie?
Haven't you chosen to recant? Ben pressed him.
This is madness, Yakis croaked. He tried to kill you, my prince. The title made Yakis remember himself. His face disintegrated into the expressions Ben hadn't seen when he'd left Yakis on the forecastle deck. Hurt, anger, longing. Ben ached anew. His father hadn't made Yakis feel that pain.
Defensor Ryan, take note.
The lack of emotion in Ben's voice shocked even him.
My father will wish to know that I am ensuring the pious God's work is completed. My new assistant is eager to help fill the world with the purity that saved his soul.
He looked at the mech.
Tell the defensors.
He didn't know the mech's name.
Gunner.
The mech filled in for him.
I, Gunner Landvik, serve.
The muscles in his jaw swelled.
I serve the pious God.
27. The village where Lu and Vex decided to dock the Meander could barely be called civilization. The waters of Backswamp liquefying the whole area. Every building teetered on stilts, people shuffling between them on sagging, moss-covered bridges. Unsteady docks bobbed under the weight of people in knitted cloaks or crocodile skin vests, tethering their boats and unloading cargo over the mildew-infested waters. The remoteness of the village made it easy to forget that in the bigger cities, council soldiers were still arresting raiders, driven by the Argridian delegates demanding justice for Milo's abduction. Grace Luray was already near civil war, so said the scouts Kansu sent out. None of the council knew that Argrid had caused this conflict and was coming to break Grace Luray when it was at its weakest. Lou stared out the porthole of the rapid meander, botanical wonders open against her chest, teeth catching her cheek. In the vials she'd snatched from Pilkvist, she had ended up with two of drooping fern, one of alova pipe, and one of cleanse root. Drooping fern would be useful if Vex had ingested Awasia. She couldn't imagine the church hadn't given him that plant to keep him awake. Alova pipe was not, as far as she knew, a counter to any plant, and it had no use beyond being a skin protectant. Cleanse root had many uses, if Vex had an actual disease. Lou closed botanical wonders, her finger trailing over the bullet hole in the cover. Two raps came from the door to the bunk room. Lou opened it to find Vex, his hands cupped to hide something in his palms, one side of his mouth skewed up. He broke apart his hands, revealing a vial.
Brightmint, said Lou. You found it.
Etta did.
He extended the vial and Lou took it, analyzing the segment of bushy green plant within.
The crew she's on did a job to get some.
Lou winced.
She's all right? The mechs haven't recognized her?
Vex let loose a rakish smile.
Give us more credit than that.
Raiders lived for this, he'd said. Danger, excitement, generally causing mayhem. One of Kansu's raiders had left the night they'd made their plans, bound for New Diza and Kari with a letter Lu penned. A day later, five of Kansu's raiders, who had a blend of Tunkian and Mecht in their ancestries, with fairer hair and lighter skin to pass as Mecht, and Edda had managed to get into various Mecht crews. Once Kari read of the Mecht Syndicate's involvement with Argrid, Eleazar's planned magic abuse, and the Argridian Armada's approach, she would take action. And Lu would arrive in a few days to further press for help, hopefully with Milo Ibarra in tow. With the pieces in motion, Kansu had returned to Port Mezitib to listen for news of Argrid's approach through the budwig beans that Fatima had planted around the island. Vex had suggested staying in Backswamp, where their spies on the Mecht crews could run reports to them. One managed to sink three of Pilkvist's boats and make it look like an accident. Another had destroyed a half dozen crates of his plants, and Vex, using a budwig bean left by Kansu, relayed it all to Port Mezitib. Small progress, but enough? Doubtful, seeing as it was 1 week before Argrid would arrive, if Pilkvist's two-week deadline was correct. Lu pushed down her worry. She had to believe that her parents would come through. Her mother, Kari the Wave, one of the most feared leaders of the revolution, would find a way to use Lu's information, and Tom was just as resourceful and wise. But Lu had spent the past 5 years watching the council argue over simple things. She wasn't sure they would take her information as proof. Yet Kansu's raider spies on Pilkvist's crews hadn't found any news of Milo. No correspondence between Pilkvist and Argrid. There was nothing concrete to send to New Diza to supplement her letter. Lu's dread carved a permanent hole in her chest. She moved around Vex now, heading for the engine room and the laboratory they had improvised with supplies gathered from the village. The heat of the room had become familiar, as calming to her as the book in her arms. She busied herself with the beakers on the table beside the furnace as Vex dropped onto Edda's cot. He leaned against the wall with his arms folded behind his head.
I should have added a kid to my crew years ago. Haven't had this many days of peace. Ever.
Lu cut him a threatening look.
Teo would be overjoyed to hear you say that.
It isn't me you have to worry about. That kid's got Nyeli completely under his spell. He already bewitched Edda, too. I think we might be stuck with him.
Vex gestured to the deck, where Nyeli and Teo posed as a traveling brother and sister. Lu had to admit that this way, though it put Teo on display, had proven safest so far. No one in the secluded village had given them trouble. Lu broke down the bright mint. She had already prepared the drooping fern. A bell jar filled with the knockout smoke waited in the middle of the table, the glass supported to keep it from falling over. Lu held her breath and, as fast as she could, slid a plate of bright mint paste into the drooping fern smoke. The combination should result in slumber and enhanced mental function in a dream state, thanks to the bright mint, which might enable Vex's mind to remember what the church had poisoned him with. After a few minutes, Lu slid the plate of bright mint paste back out, cradling it in her palms. Vex had crouched forward, elbows on his knees. His focus leaped from the floor to her with a forced smile.
Ready?
Lu didn't approach him. Giving magic tonics to Annalisa had been easier, as she had had no fear of botanical magic. But Lu briefly imagined the situation in reverse, with herself seated on the cot and Vex readying to give her a concoction.
We don't have to do this, Lu whispered.
The smallness of the engine room let Vex take her wrist without having to leave the cot, and he tugged her toward him, planting her between his knees.
Yes, we do,
he said. He didn't let go of her wrist. His knees pressed on either side of her legs, and the closeness of him made Lu incapable of moving anyway. She stared at him, his eye on the drooping fern-infused bright mint.
Try to focus on what you want to know, she said, her voice weak.
She realized what she was asking. that he relive what the church had done. Her heart galloped, a cold sweat warring with the engine room's heat. This was madness. There had to be another, less intrusive way. But when she looked at Vex, he grinned.
You're cute when you're worried, he said.
The muscles in her shoulders relaxed.
You aren't?
Cute? Always.
Worried.
A shudder worked down the corded muscles in his neck, a flinch that he fought to cover by shaking his head. But he didn't say anything. Maybe couldn't. Lou forced a smile despite her nerves.
Let's recount. The fearsome Devereaux Bell is afraid of heights, as well as...
His eye brightened.
You were never supposed to talk about that.
I'm not the best at following orders.
You hide it so well.
She used a spoon to gather the bright mint concoction and, as she spoke, pressed it to his lips.
I hide many things, Devereaux.
He ate the paste and lifted his eyebrow.
That sounds like a challenge.
Only the slightest tremor told her he was afraid, or it might have been from shaking sickness. She was noticing it in him more. A spasm here, a shiver there. Had he always exhibited signs of the illness, or was she more aware of his body now?
Oh, not a challenge. A proposition.
Lou set the empty plate and spoon on the table behind her.
I make you a one-time offer to have me here and now.
The drooping fern was taking effect. Vex swayed, caught himself with a hand on the cot.
Unfair, he groaned. To make that offer to a man when he can't act on it.
Ah, there are plants that can fix problems of that sort.
Vex lay on the cot, one arm thrown over his head, but he paused and cut her a narrow-eyed smirk.
No,
he murmured, his eye fluttering shut.
That would never be a problem. Not when you laugh. Como una canción.
Like a song.
Lou's lips opened, and in the stillness of the engine room, she heard herself make a soft, involuntary sigh. Had he intended to say something so sweet to her, or was it the botanical magic whisking him away from reason and reality? She repeated the words, a moment of indulgence, and realized he'd said that in proper Argridian. He was there already in his mind, in the church's holding cells. The stark reality cut through the velvet around Lou's heart. War was coming. Argrid was close. Who knew what the council was doing? But of all the problems in Lou's world, this one she could solve. She slid her hand over Vex's arm and started to hum. The song Teo always sang when he was afraid, the one Kari had sung after Annalisa died.
Dirt and sand, all across the land. The currents are ours, you see. No god, no soldier, no emperor, no king can take my current from me. Flow on, my friends. Flow on with me. Together we flow as one. No god, no soldier, no emperor, no king can erode what we have done. Slowly, the memory tonic worked. Vex remembered aerated blossom after breakfast one morning. Croxy at sunset one night. He knew there were others, but Lou scratched up a list of the plants that would counter the ones he'd recalled to get started on those. Vex whisked the list to Etta, who would continue to hunt for plants while she spied on Pilkvist's crew. There was no news of Milo Ibarra. Vex knew he and Lou were starting to go mad. They couldn't see the sun in Back Swamp, but that didn't stop them from counting the days. How close were they to Argrid's arrival? More than a week after they'd made their plans with Kansu, Lou, Vex, and Nayeli readied to go to New Diza. It was way longer than Vex had wanted to wait around in Back Swamp before they went to Lou's mom, but Etta kept pressing them to give her time.
Who knows what chaos will find you in New Diza? Remember,
You're a wanted criminal, and Lou broke you out of prison.
They couldn't wait any longer, but Vex feared they had waited too long, and so the morning they decided to leave, it was too damn perfect that Nayeli flung herself down the Meander's hatch.
Etta just dropped this off.
Nayeli tossed Lou a vial of power sage. It would combat the aerated blossom.
And she said to let you know that the cruise she's on has a trip scheduled for tonight.
Vex splayed his hand on the tabletop next to Lou as she put the power sage into boiling water. He whipped his head to Nayeli.
What? Tonight? Where?
They're meeting a ship off the coast.
Tell me it's one of their own.
If it was, would they need to meet up with it in the dark with little warning?
Vex wavered. Relieved he could blame it on shaking sickness, not his desire to plunge the Meander into a forgotten corner of the island and leave all this behind. They'd waited too long. All their hope hung on that letter Lou had sent to her mother, but had it been enough to convince the council to do anything? If Vex hadn't listened to Etta and had just gone to New Deza without her for protection, would Lou have been able to change anything? Vex shared a look with Lou and almost said all his worries out loud, until he saw her face, gray with horror.
Tonight?
She spun on Nayeli.
We're supposed to have more time until...
But she stopped. Pilkvist's two-week timeline had been a stretch.
All right.
Lou gathered herself, pulling up her unbreakable shield. Vex balked. How could she do that? He was ready to drop to his knees and scream his terror to the planks of his boat, and he knew she was just as afraid.
We must tell Kansu. Maybe Kansu's raider reached my mother with the message and she's already sent support. Just because we haven't heard anything or weren't able to go doesn't mean the council won't help.
The budwig bean Vex had been using to communicate with Kansu sat on the table, and Nayeli snatched it.
I'll tell her.
She slipped into the hall. Lou leaned closer to Vex. Out of instinct or intent, he wasn't sure, but he didn't so much as breathe too harshly in case it would make her move away.
I'm sure your mother has help coming, he whispered. If the council is only a day or two away, we can scout the ships tonight and get information. Find out how many ships, how many weapons. I doubt Argrid will attack the moment they land. Maybe the council heard about the approaching ships through their own sources? They could already be moving on it themselves.
The Argridian diplomats will likely be filtering information. They could have kept the ship's approach a secret, Lou said. She dropped her gaze to the floor. Each day that passed without Kansu's raider returning from New Deza or Etta finding Ibarra intensified the worry line between her eyebrows. Lou looked up. She blinked in surprise at how close Vex was. He could feel her shoulder against his chest, the rush of her exhale on his face. She didn't pull back. God, he wasn't even touching her. One hand was flat on the table, the other in his pocket. But his blood thickened. Every time she let him this close, it was like she'd granted him permission to experience something guarded and secret and downright amazing. He soaked it up in case this was as close as she ever let him get. A thump in the hall made Lou jolt back. Vex turned to see Nayeli sagging against the doorframe. She looked at Lou. The sorrow on her face made Vex step forward, like he could take the brunt of the news she had.
They're not coming,
Nayeli whispered. Lou seized Vex's arm. He wasn't sure she knew she'd done it.
What?
Lou asked.
Kansu's raider got back to the sanctuary. Barely escaped New Deza with his life.
Nayeli shook her head.
He never even got close to the council. The seniors sided with Argrid 2 weeks ago and ratified the treaty.
Lou choked.
What? No, my mother said she would delay it. She said she would fight.
The council members who resisted the treaty are under house arrest.
Nayeli's eyes shifted to Vex, like she couldn't stand to look at Lou as she talked.
The council has declared Stream Raiders enemies of the state.
The council isn't coming.
They've declared war on us.
Lou?
Vex's voice pulled her back to the surface.
Adeluna,
he said, and she felt her hand on his arm. He stayed steady, and Lou couldn't release him. Not now.
Since it's just us, Nayeli continued, no emotion in her voice. Kansu wants us to move before our grid gets a foothold here. Or more of a foothold, at least.
Vex frowned and asked,
What does she think we can do against our Gridian warships, if that's what's coming?
Blow them up. Send a message to Argrid that not everyone on the island is willing to bow to them, like...
Lou heaved forward.
No. We need to scout the ships. What if they aren't warships? What if they aren't even from Argrid? It could be a misunderstanding. There has to be a peaceful solution. I have to believe we can convince the Council in time to ally with the raiders and stop Argrid again. I have to. I cannot live in a world where Argrid could destroy us so easily. Please.
She said the last word to Vex. She wasn't sure why. Not for permission, not for guidance. But that word came, and she wanted him to assure her that she was right. Vex nodded.
All right,
he said. He looked at Nayeli.
Tell Kansu we're gonna scout the ships off the coast tonight. We're not giving up. We'll find out what they are, where they're from, and if they're Argridian, we'll...
He paused, his face going pale.
We'll find proof. Something to convince the Council that raiders aren't to blame in all this.
Even if they had gone to New Deza as planned, it wouldn't have been enough. They needed proof now, not testimony. They needed Milo, or documents, or a captured Argridian soldier who would confess all. This was their best chance at stopping the war.
Argrid can't win the war, even with magic, if Grace Luray unifies.
Lou gained traction, her eagerness growing.
They fear it, otherwise they would not have gone to such lengths to break us apart. We have to try.
Nayeli bowed with the weary exhale of someone who knew the odds. Only one syndicate would fight the Argridian invasion. Argrid might have a small military, but it had taken every syndicate and all those who called themselves Grace Lorraine to stop them during the revolution. Grace Lorraine could lose the very freedom its citizens had worked so hard to earn. Lou didn't know what to do with her emotions. And as Nayeli used the Budwig bean to pass on their plans to Kansu, Lou moved back to the table. Her limbs worked by memory until she knocked over a vial, her hands shaking. Vex wrapped his fingers around her wrist. His other hand settled on the back of her neck, a whisper of a touch that shot comfort down her spine. She leaned against him, but all she saw were words flashing in her mind. The war is returning. Everything I did, the lives I took, the horrible acts I committed, meant nothing. Etta gave them the mech boat's current location so they could trail it out to the sea. She couldn't abandon her mech crew without arousing suspicion. But Kansu said that she would get her raiders out to the ocean. It would be a day of travel from the Tunkian Syndicate. Until then, Nayeli, Vex, and Lou would find out what mysterious contacts the mechs were meeting late at night. They would scout and get proof of Argrid's conspiracy, and Lou would do everything in her power to make the Council see reason. The rapid meander left the backswamp village later that afternoon. Nayeli operated the engine room. Vex went to the pilot house. Lou stayed alongside Nayeli to assist her, and Teo stayed with them to keep out of trouble. After a few hours, Nayeli said,
We've reached the ocean.
Lou paused in the motion of shoveling coal into the furnace. Teo sat on Etta's cot, flipping through botanical wonders.
I'll be a moment, Teo, she said.
He hummed at her in response, idly kicking his legs. Lou lifted herself onto the deck, where monstrous arching trees had been interspersed with the swamp's moist, mossy shadows. There was now an expanse of blue, star-speckled navy sky above, and froth-capped indigo ocean below. The air filled her lungs with salt and freshness and a churning sensation brought by the wind in her ears and the waves crashing against the boat's hull. She had seen the ocean a few times, and this undeniable swell of power always awed her. Here was a force that no one could tame or break. The rapid meander sped along, smoke streaming into the dark sky. The late hour worked in their favor, giving them the advantage of stealth when they doused the lanterns. Other steamboats sailed ahead of them, lights low. The mecked boats, one carrying Etta. An hour later, the steamboats they followed dove around an inlet. New silhouettes nestled alongside tufts of rock far off the coasts. In the pilot house, Lou shifted at the door. Ships.
Only one country has sails like that.
Vex's posture was rigid at the helm. Lou forced herself to say the word they were thinking. To not fear it.
Argrid.
28. The three steamboats they followed headed for the largest of the ships hidden among the rock outcroppings. Lou braced herself in the pilot house's doorway and counted the clusters of masts. Three belonged to brigantines, two-masted vessels equipped for speed and protection, and two belonged to galleons, behemoths of transport and comfort. No warships. But it was hardly reassuring that this fleet was not sent to destroy them. Who was on those ships? Why were they here? Were more ships waiting off the coast? Lou's resolution not to let Nayeli blow up the ships hardened. They needed information. No matter what Kansu said or what Lou herself had feared, war had not yet come. They could still stop this without violence. The rapid meander slowed as Vex maneuvered them around the jagged rocks. The steamboats ahead faded from sight, night welcoming them into the embrace of the hidden gathering.
Two main ships, he noted.
Nayeli had joined them on deck moments after the Argridian ships came into view, the furnace well stocked with coal, and Teos safely below decks. The big one will be full of activity as soon as the mechs show up, she said. As if on cue, a single lantern flared to life on board the largest galleon. It flashed twice, then was joined by a second lantern. The lights low enough that, had Lou not been paying attention, she would have dismissed it as starlight. Plus, Etta'll be with them, so she'll keep an eye out for things there, Nayeli added.
Things,
Vex echoed.
Plants or weapons or news of ships beyond that we can't see.
They aren't warships, Lou countered. This won't end in bloodshed. We can handle anything else. Vex gave her a disbelieving look.
Bloodshed isn't the worst thing that could come from those ships. Who do you think's on them? Happy diplomats come to celebrate the peace treaty and leave with smiles on their faces?
Lou clamped her lips, wrestling her fear into submission. But Vex set her mind spinning. The king could be on one of those ships. His son. High-ranking generals with orders to ready the island for incoming waves of soldiers. Or perhaps these ships had come at Milo's behest, and he was aboard one, gloating in satisfaction of his impending victory over Grace Luray. What did they have to stop him? Kansu's syndicate and the seniors under house arrest? Lou's hope wilted, the last feeble petal on a dying flower. They could stop this. They could board those ships, find proof, take it to the council. Her plan echoed, focusing her mind. Get aboard a ship. Find proof that Argrid did this. Get to the council. Lou was a soldier. She was a spy. This was what she did. Gathered information, took it back to her parents. Her body and mind functioned on that instinct, but beyond it, she was fraying. Lou pointed at the smaller galleon off to the right and farther back. We'll start there. Vex plowed the meander in that direction, weaving behind rocks to put space between them and the brigantines. The smaller galleon was docked at the farthest rock, as though its captain found the proceedings boring and wanted to waste no time leaving once the order came. Vex brought the meander around the ship's port side, the right edge of the vessel flush with the rock. He dropped the engine as low as it would go, the eternal slosh and groan of the ocean covering its hum, and as the boat drew closer, a struggle raged in Lou's body. She hadn't felt this mix of emotions since her missions during the revolution. Anticipation, bright and nauseating and exciting, paired with an exquisite dread. but it was that dread that climbed over all else, towering above her drive, her resolve. Milo Ibarra could be on that ship. Vex killed the engine. The galleon's hull bulged with four floors of portholes, arranged in decorative rows that, Lou suspected, would glint with polished copper in the sunlight. But those decorations would be their way in. Climb the moldings, flip over the railing, and search each floor for news of Argrid's next step, or Eleazar's progression, or Milo.
Nay, keep the meander hidden behind some of those rocks. We'll signal you when we need to leave. But if things turn bad, get to safety.
Vex gave the order behind Lou. She didn't move, her shoulder fused to the pilot house's frame.
Lou and I can handle this, can't we?
Lou's eyes went to the galleon's silent deck. Hire Devereaux Bell to find Milo Ibarra. It had been her only plan. She hadn't thought this far ahead with all that had happened. To the moment when they would find him, and Vex would assume she'd accompany him to get Milo, she wasn't a lady now. She was who she used to be, a spy, a murderer. Milo would see her brandishing weapons, defiant, vicious. Lou spun away from Vex.
No, you go, see if Milo is on board.
Vex gave her an odd look.
Ordinarily, I'd be flattered that you think so highly of my skills, but that's not all we're here for. Ibarra's important, sure, but he's not the—
This is what I hired you for, Lou told him. I infiltrated far worse places with far less information, and as a child, no less. Lou threw herself at the hatch, getting one hand on the ring to open it before Vex stopped her, his boot on the door.
Why do you think Ibarra'll fix this? What's he gonna do, confess all he's done?
Lou looked up at him.
Under the proper circumstances?
Vex dropped back. His demeanor changed, arms slack, eye narrowing. The boat rocked as Nayeli moved closer, while Vex looked tragic and exhausted and furious all at once.
What exactly are the proper circumstances?
He asked. Lou's heart thundered, her mind roaring yet empty, ocean spray stuck hair to her cheeks, made her palms clammy and her whole body cold. She'd wanted to find Milo Ibarra, to drag him back to face the council. But Milo wouldn't confess. He'd never confessed anything he'd done. But he would this time. Lou would make him. That wish sprouted in her belly, roots dug into her legs, leaves unfurling in her chest and up her mouth until she parted her lips and knew if she let the wish grow, she would laugh. What fragments she had left of herself would clatter out of her fingers, and her wicked, terrible wish would make her pain disappear. Because she wouldn't exist after it was fulfilled. She would be as bad as Milo. But she wouldn't feel anything. She had wanted that for 5 years, to not feel. Lou looked up at the galleon, tears hot.
Lou,
Vex tried. His voice told her he hadn't moved closer, as if knowing that any motion right now would set her off.
What's happening? Why do you care so much about Ibarra?
His question broke. Lou opened her eyes to see that Vex had bumped into the pilot house's wall, his mouth agape. What? Nayeli prodded. She didn't know Lou's story like Vex did. Lou saw on his face that he'd made the connection. She couldn't stop his realization, and that loss of control freed her to say the words she had never admitted aloud.
He was the Argridian commander, the night they attacked the rebel headquarters.
Vex's hands opened, closed into fists.
You've been sitting by him in council meetings,
his voice grated.
Letting him live. Letting him be near you.
I haven't allowed him anything, Lou refuted. He doesn't know who I am.
Vex panted.
He doesn't.
Nayeli seemed to feel the gravity in this situation, even if she couldn't place it.
Gods,
If you find him on board, just kill him.
You're damn right,
Vex said. He lunged toward the galleon, one foot on the railing of the meander, before Lou grabbed his arm.